I'm Marcus Smith, and this is Constant Wonder. Every morning, we awake to a world marvelously alive. Where do we encounter awe and wonder in this world? In animals and plants, in deserts, on mountains, in forests, ocean, and sky, in history, art, and science, in human striving and human kindness. Join us as we quest for the awe and wonder of knowing we are part of something infinitely larger than ourselves. Genevieve Page, an American ninja warrior, was competing in her fifth season. Her personal story of resilience after tragedy came quickly to the fore, not only with the cameras zooming in on her athleticism as a 41-year-old mom in a moment of fierce competition, but with the show's commentators zooming in on what the crowd in the stands could not see, Genevieve's backstory.
Well, Matt, she's painting a perfect picture of what it means to be a ninja out here tonight.
And it's so great how many people who may be coping with their own grief, their own unimaginable losses, to see someone surviving and thriving. And you can see, Akbar, she's looking pretty confident out here on the course.
It was moments later that her run during season 17 of the show ended when she stumbled and fell on the obstacle called Log Runner. What hasn't ended is the great admiration of Genevieve Page's fans, who know her not only as a strong competitive athlete, but for her success as a fine artist. Today on Constant Wonder, we bring you a conversation with Genevieve Page, artist and athlete. At first glance, those two words might seem worlds apart, but with her eye for wonder, Genevieve has found a commonality in them. As you'll hear in this episode, our conversation touched on a few specific paths she has followed that have led to experiences of wonder, some paths taken by choice, and some she would never have chosen. I'm thinking now of a prominent point in the trajectory of her adult life when she suffered and grieved the tragic death of her young child, Morgan, in a drowning. That event will be part of this conversation, as well as some of the circumstances that allowed Genevieve to find a way forward after her loss. As it turns out, she was only 10 years old when she began walking one of those paths, which is journaling. Keeping diaries or journals, this has been a constant in her life ever since, and it shapes the way she notices and remembers, providing inspiration for her creative work.
It was 1,000% my mom when she introduced me to this process of a daily reflective moment with prayer, reading scripture, and writing in a journal as like a connective practice. My mom had been to a event in Washington and had heard a gentleman talk about like the benefits of journaling. And she came home from that event and was on fire and wanted to teach her kids about it. And she actually introduced journaling to me as a way to increase my spirituality. I just thought, hey, it's worth a shot. Like, let's see what happens.
And did it make sense?
I mean, I guess I just thought of it as like an experiment. I mean, if she says I could develop a relationship with God and it only is this, you know, small little devotional practice every day, like, why not? Go for it. Oddly enough, though, really, I think I was the only one of my four siblings that really took it seriously. My beginning entries are very simple. You know, they're talking about, I went shopping for school clothes. And I'm nervous about having to open a locker in sixth grade. I was starting middle school. You know, just really simple things. And I think I did kind of wonder, this is how I have a relationship with God, huh? Especially because some entries were, you know, jumped on the trampoline and I made ramen for lunch.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're saying this. Yeah. Because
well, and to be honest, I wasn't super consistent when I started. I didn't write every day. But for me, over the course of my life, consistency is not necessarily something you're perfect at. It's just something you return to, even if it's been a while. And I always return to it. However, the journaling didn't become really efficacious until about eighth grade, because that's when I encountered problems.
Such as?
Such as my best friend from the previous year didn't want to be my friend anymore.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. I was heartbroken. I mean, I was actually really nerdy. So I didn't have a ton of friends to begin with. So when you, like, the one friend that you do have doesn't want to be your friend anymore, it was pretty devastating, you know? And it's really interesting, though, because that's when writing in your journal becomes really powerful, is when you have a problem, because it offers you a place to put it.
Were you self-conscious about this? So you put something that I was always worried that somebody would find my journal, pick it up and read it.
Of course, I thought about what if somebody reads this? And it actually wasn't until my senior year that I really noticed I was editing. And I actually got mad about it. I remember being in my room and thinking, why are you even doing this if you're not being real? This is stupid. This is pointless. If we're not being honest, then this is dumb. And so it was my senior year that I threw that editing out the window and just thought, you know what? If my mom reads this, if, you know, my kids in the future read this, well, they're going to get the truth. And I'd rather them have the truth than some shallow, you know, paragraph that I made up that night.
I had begun around age 10 with a little journal. And I gave up. And the reason I gave up was because of that fakery. I knew that I was writing for an audience that might find my journal, and I was painting a picture that was just dishonest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I honestly, like I said, I wasn't writing a lot. It was more of like a sense of duty. Like, my mom says this will help me, so I'm going to write a little paragraph. But then over time, like I said, as problems came and I started writing more from the heart, and then for sure by the time I'm 17 and experienced true freedom in my writing, that's when I became addicted to it, you know? And there was this sense of freedom that I could just say whatever I needed to say, and who cares if somebody reads it? This is the reality of the human experience.
That seems really mentally healthy.
Yeah, it is. And I think I had some maturity and some, you know, maybe better mental health for a 17-year-old girl than most because of writing.
Over time, those dutiful little jottings in a journal had given way to something deeper. Because Jenity had stopped editing herself, her journaling became a practice of great honesty. As we visited, naturally, I had to ask for a concrete example. In advance of meeting her in our studio, we had arranged for her to bring some journals, and she actually brought along with her a very impressive stack. I want you to give us an example of an entry, and I know you've brought a couple. Maybe you could just share an entry that you remember, perhaps, from that era that that you didn't edit.
Yeah, so I do have one, and this is actually the summer after my freshman year of college. So I'm actually 18 in this entry.
Fair enough.
Sunday, May 11th, 2003. Mom and Dad had to go to the airport at 3 a.m. because they had a flight at 6. It was snowing outside, yes, in May. Jace went to a party and hadn't come home. He was supposed to drive with us to the airport, so I would have to drive home alone. Well, we left out on the road at 3 a.m. anyways, and Mom was so stressed. The roads were terrible, the worst I'd ever seen. The snow was coming down in big, wet chunks, creating a really thick slush that covered the ground. Dad is a good driver, and he was still sliding all over. We made it to the airport, and my parents still had an hour and 20 minutes before their flight. I told my mom not to worry, that I would be fine. However, inside, I was scared to drive home. But I knew God was with me. So I hugged my parents goodbye, hiding my sheer terror, and got behind the wheel as they walked to their terminal. I had driven home from the airport before, but wasn't quite sure which exits to take. This was before GPS. I figured I'd just follow the exits that led to Fort Collins. The only problem was the road signs were caked with snow and ice, and the words were very obscure. I got behind a semi-truck labeled McLean Food Service Distribution. I couldn't see the road very well, but I could see the four red lights on the back of the truck. I figured that if I could just follow those lights, I would be okay. As I watched the truck in front of me, I could see it clear my path. As it splashed the slush out of the way, and I realized that God had sent me my own personal escort. I recognized the McLean truck The company was close to our townhouse in Longmont, where we used to live. I could follow it all the way to Longmont, and then it would be just a mile or two before the Johnstown exit. When the truck changed lanes, so did I. When it sped up, so did I. The truck merged north from 270 West onto I-25 and north towards Longmont. When I saw the Longmont exit, after an hour or so of driving, I was relieved to find I had gotten that far safely. Then, fully expecting the truck to leave, I figured I could make it from Longmont to Johnstown on my own. However, the Longmont exit came and went, but the truck stayed with me. Phew, I wouldn't be alone, and I still had my lights to follow. The right light on the back of the truck began to flash. It was going to Johnstown. So the light stayed with me clear up until a mile to my house. When I pulled in the driveway, I loosened my death grip on the steering wheel and cried tears of gratitude. What kind of semi-truck from Denver goes to Johnstown and at 5 o'clock in the morning? Then I smiled at the message I had memorized written on a sticker on the back of the truck. Lights on for safety. Moral of the story, follow the lights in front of you.
The entry she's just read from one of her journals depicts a night when a frightened young woman leaned into her faith in a snowstorm. With hindsight, it's not hard to see that road home from the airport as practice for Jenity, maybe even preparation for heavier challenges ahead. Taken in its entirety, her summary of the experience, of course, captures more than just a happy ending with a bright moral. Before she arrived safely home, she had had very real fear and trepidation. That's a storyline we're all familiar with. And having put the memory down in ink, it then can become vivid to her all over again.
One of the benefits of keeping a journal is you can time travel. And I think that is such an amazing thing, right? How many times do we watch movies where it's like the impossible, you can time travel, and really keeping a journal allows you to go back and visit your first day of sixth grade or visit that really scary drive home. And I find this often with journal entries is that their efficacy and their power sometimes grows exponentially with time. Because from that time, you know, I was 18 when I wrote it. I think I revisited it at like 38. So 20 years later. And I just had seen so many more times in my life where those lights had been there for me.
Circling back years later to read things from her personal history, says Jenity, well, it brings the delightful, wondrous experience of time travel, as she's described. We all gain perspective with the passage of years. But the important process of emotional growth and development through journaling, it can be much speedier than that. Here's her explanation of how spontaneous, original thoughts and feelings on any given morning might be illuminated in a wholly fresh light within mere hours. Maybe that evening or perhaps the next day.
It's crazy because in the process of writing, you actually discover answers. Things come into your mind and it's almost like you get a broader perspective of the situation and you can see more clearly solutions. Because when you're just in life, when you're experiencing the thing, like when I'm in that car driving with the death grip and I'm terrified, you're going to experience it very differently then than when you go and write about it. Because when you go and write about it, you're no longer currently in it. And so you're almost, you get like this outside perspective, an aerial view, so to speak. And I think anytime you get the aerial perspective on your life, things just look way clearer.
I'm Marcus Smith. Today's guest on Constant Wonder is a fine artist and painter and an American Ninja Warrior competitor by the name of Jenity Page. Later in this episode, she'll share a story of heartbreak, including some of the details associated with her deep grief upon the loss of a child. Before that, she'll share an example of how she sorted out some difficult life priorities and options using her go-to tool of writing, once again, in a personal journal. If you're enjoying this conversation, I'd love for you to join us beyond the podcast. We have launched a new newsletter at constantwonder.substack.com. It's free, and it's where we share episode extras and behind-the-scenes notes, adding a little more wonder into your life. Again, that's constantwonder.substack.com. Head there to subscribe and say hello. For Jenna D. Page, journaling has never been merely about using words to capture ideas. By her senior year of high school, her journal entries had begun to take on additional shapes and colors and textures. Each entry was a new opportunity for new approaches as she explored and reflected on the wide world and her place in it.
So I was living in Utah and was on this very academic path. And then at the end of my junior year, my dad got a job in Johnstown, Colorado. However, my parents knew it was going to be my senior year and that my grandparents lived right next to my high school. And so my mom said, you can stay, you can finish your senior year. I was actually going to be a student body officer. I had auditioned for the cool choirs and I played in the band and stuff. And so I was leaving. It would be a lot. I mean, moving your senior year at all is difficult, but to leave all that behind.
Yeah, devastating for a lot of kids. Right?
Yeah. Talk about problems, okay? So my mom said, Jenity, I trust you to make this decision. And she trusted me because she had taught me how to make decisions. So I wrote about it in my journal, and I didn't want to go. But one way that I found that God connects with me is through questions. I was at work one day by myself and a question came into my mind. What do you want? And it was big picture. Like, what do you want out of life? And on the list was, I wanted to go to college. I wanted to be married. I wanted to be a mother. And I wanted to write a book. And after I made that list, then the next question came into my head and it was, well, which of these things can't you have in your life if you move? And I looked at the list and I thought, well, I guess I could still do all those things. And then the next question, what are the positives of staying here and what are the positives of moving? So I wrote again. The list of staying was big, like we already discussed, and the list of moving had one item, and it was my family. And I knew as I wrote and looked at that list that that one thing was more important than everything else on the other side. And it was in that moment I decided that I would move.
And did you slip into the school right at the beginning of the school year?
Uh-huh.
Well, that was a plus.
Yeah, so it was the very beginning of the school year, and this art teacher taught me that art was about conveying a message. Like my whole life, I thought art was make something look three-dimensional on a two-dimensional surface. And she was like, no. I want you to portray an emotion on this piece of paper using only color, value, and shape. She didn't want me to use like known symbols. And at first I thought, this is so weird. But then the other assignment she gave me was we had to keep an art journal. So
yeah. there you go.
So here we go again. Yeah, she said, instead of writing how you feel or things that you're experiencing, I want you to try to convey it in an image. And this was totally foreign to me. But I got excited about it. Why? Because it was a journal. And I had already seen like the benefits of keeping a journal. And so to be introduced to art in the form of a journal really was like the most perfect way it could have been introduced to me. And then as soon as I started, I was addicted. It just lit my little soul on fire and I couldn't draw. So I just really did a lot of collage work my senior year, just cut and pasted out of magazines, but it filled my soul to do it.
Whatever form her journal took, pencil or pen on a page, pictures cut from magazines and glued down, her own drawings or illustrations, putting stuff in journals was a constant for Jenity. It really became a way of slowing down long enough to notice not just her anxieties and attitudes, but also her awe in and for the moment. And as her life course shifted into motherhood, the content of entries naturally shifted too. Many times her journal was a place to hold side by side both the sheer exhaustion, but also the awe of those early years of parenting.
Yeah, I actually really treasure those early mother journals because they have scribbles from my boys and them and just the pure frustration and the fatigue. oh, you're so tired and you're wanting to do all the things and you just, it's just so difficult. My writing wasn't every day, but when I was particularly frustrated or when my son had done something absolutely adorable that I wanted to never forget, then I always made time to write it down.
He was your first?
Yeah, I had three boys and then a girl. My oldest son, his name is Victory Morgan. Mm-hmm.
So, and he goes by Morgan. Mm-hmm. This is always a challenge when I'm visiting with somebody who has had, you know, I'm no stranger to sorrow and loss. And yet every sorrow and loss is unique and profound. And tell us, for somebody who's never heard the story, they're going to need to know some of the details. But I am particularly interested in this nexus of your journaling during this tragic story of your life. Yeah.
Yeah, so my husband and I got married in 2005. We graduated in 2006. We moved to Los Angeles. So we lived there for 4 years and we had two little boys, Victory Morgan and Benson True. They both went by their middle names. And after about 4 years in California, my husband decided he wanted to get a graduate degree. So we moved to Arizona and we moved in with my parents so that we could actually afford grad school. And my parents lived on a house with an acre, and they had a pool and a pond. And my mom was worried about both bodies of water with my young sons. But she had like a fence around her patio that kind of basically kept the whole backyard off limits. And so it seemed fine, and we had alarms and all the things. But one morning, just kind of a perfect storm led to me pulling my son out of the swimming pool. And you call 911, and it's so out of body because it's so terrible that you hope it's not really happening. I think it's maybe like some kind of self-defense mechanism when we have, I've heard that a lot when people go through tragedy, that feels like you're almost watching it from outside your body. But I remember wondering why the paramedics weren't there yet. Like, what was taking so long? Because time just slows down. My son was resuscitated and life-flighted and spent 7 weeks in a hospital. It was the Tucson Medical Center. And these two books comprise the 7 weeks that I was there. They're probably my ugliest journals because they came free from the hospital. But they're definitely like some of my most sacred moments. And, you know, I talked about how journaling became efficacious when I had a problem. Well, you know, suddenly I find myself in the biggest problem I've ever faced. And like I said, I had been building this relationship with God for several years. So I almost went into the experience thinking, I'm not alone. Like, surely he'll help me now. But my son experienced something called sympathetic storming, which is something that happens, I don't know, fairly common with near drownings.
It's kind of like a seizure, maybe?
Yeah, it's like the sympathetic nervous system goes into hyperdrive and everything flexes, and it's really hard on the body. And I basically filled these journals with stories of storms. We'll just pick a random one and see what it says. October 15th, 2011, the storms rage on. It seems anymore. Morgan can't comfort himself, and we're constantly having to fight for an hour or more until we give in to drugs. God, have I mentioned this is tearing me up inside? Please tell me this is part of some great plan that I lack the foresight to see. Sorry. Every day I just documented, you know, when the storms were, how long they lasted, what the doctors attempted to do, and hoped that God would perform some miracle. And then this entry is actually one of my most favorite because I drew a portrait of him while he was sleeping. And he looks like a little angel in the picture. And then this is November 9th, 2011. So 3 days before my son would pass away. And it says, This was in my fortune cookie today. My mom and I got some green curry from a neighboring Thai restaurant. We both felt this fortune was worth gluing in my journal. Heroism is endurance for one moment more. Yeah. Speaking of enduring for one moment, my mom believes the storms might be behind us and the end is soon in sight. How I hope she is right. And the end that I was hoping for was a miracle, and instead my son passed away. And here we enter major problem again. Major problem part two. Like, you know, the first major problem was my son was in need of help. The second major problem was God didn't give me what I wanted. And here again, journaling becomes so helpful and so essential. I think maybe it may have been easy to say, oh, there must not be a God, Jenity, because he didn't hear you. And surely if there was a God, he would have saved your son. Why wouldn't he? There definitely was like the tendency to just want to say, well, he must not be there. But the truth was, I had too much evidence. And that story that I shared of feeling comfort on the drive home from the airport was just one of hundreds of times and experiences where, if not God, somebody in the universe was definitely hearing me and helping me get through life, you know? And I had too much evidence that that was the case to walk away.
One thing a radio show or a podcast can never do is solve the big philosophical, theological questions that have plagued humanity from the get-go of why would God let us suffer? We're not going to tackle that today, you and I here in front of these microphones. But I'm so glad you shared what the questions are and that the journal had some kind of efficacy. Earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that the journal was a place where you could just put it out there and deal with questions. Relatively soon after Morgan's passing, you found another outlet, and it was very physical. And you went out to run. How soon?
So my son passed away on a Saturday, and the next day was Sunday, and I chose to attend church. And then the next day was Monday, and I got up really early with the sunrise, and I went for a run.
Do you remember that run very well? I would imagine so. I mean, yeah. Visually, you're an artist. Can you see that day?
Yeah. Yeah, because I guess that run was so impactful because I learned that my body could mourn with me. I learned that my body could be a tool. Like just as I talked about, you know, our journals are a place that you can put grief. I found that physical movement was also a place that you could put grief. Because as I ran and I cried, I yelled, I think, a few times. I was out in the middle of the desert. And it felt like I felt the emotional release, like a little bit of the weight felt lifted in having a place to put that energy, you know, put that emotion. I mean, it wasn't like it was my first run. I call myself like a casual runner through a high school and college, but I didn't learn its emotional power until after my son had passed away.
So it's fair to say that there was a distinct shift in the quality of your running. That it had a different function altogether.
Yeah, it was gritty. It was. I feel like before, and I think this is actually really symbolic of my whole life. I feel like my life before was like, it very, very innocent, very in a bubble, very much like a garden experience. In fact, to be honest, my son, Victory Morgan, was born at a time when my husband and I lived in a garden. We lived in a nursery because my husband did landscaping. And then I feel like we moved to Tucson, Arizona, which was very much not a garden space. It felt like the harsh desert. And it was there in the harsh desert that I came to understand suffering, you know? And so my running went from, oh, this is great. This is so fun. Oh, what a great way to start the day, to like almost felt like primal or something, you know, like so much inside you and it has to go somewhere. And my body became a vehicle to help express that.
From that day of that run that you just described for us to the present day, you have become increasingly athletic. Mm-hmm. Would you explain to me what this athleticism has afforded you in the years since 2011? And because that's a whole new dimension of your life.
You know, this is the thing, okay? I look back at little Jenity when she first started writing a journal. She had no idea she was going to be an artist. And I look back at little Jenity, 25-year-old, losing her son. She had no idea she was going to become a ninja. And we don't really know what we're capable of. We don't really know who we are. And that's why I think, you know, I get a lot of my identity from my daily devotional practice, because I believe in a God who knows me better. And as I try to come to know him, he introduces me to who I am. Just like he led me, I believe he led me to move my senior year to discover art. And then, you know, I'm a 34-year-old mom, and I had a little brother who invited me to go to the climbing gym with him. He gave me like a free buddy pass. And I went to a bouldering gym, so you have no harnesses or equipment. It's just if you fall, you land on a mat. But the routes were called problems. And as we know, I love problems because they're opportunities for growth. And so I immediately became addicted to climbing because it was mental, it was physical, it was so gritty because you fall and you fall and you fall, and then eventually you send it. And then when you send it, you feel absolutely amazing.
I don't know what that means. You send it?
Yeah. To send it means you finish the climb, right?
Oh.
So in bouldering, basically you have a beginning and an end, and you fall a lot in between. But the goal is to get both hands on the last hold. And if you get both hands on the last hold, then you sent it.
You've dropped the word ninja, mm-hmm. and this can go two different directions. One, your participation in recent years in the American Ninja Warrior experience. But I also happen to know that you were mentored by a William
Whitaker
who called you a ninja artist. This was long before there was this athletic thing going on. What did he mean by that when he called you a ninja artist? He didn't mean that you were an athletic artist, did he?
No.
What did he mean?
Yo, this is what's so cool about journaling, is you see the broad picture of your life and you see all these little experiences that just add up and fill you with awe and wonder, because you're just like, how? And one of those experiences was, I was a young mother wanting to become a better artist and had the opportunity to go be an apprentice for a fabulous artist named William Whitaker. He was somebody I was introduced to in college. I saw one of his originals and I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. So to be able to be in his studio studying with him was like a dream come true. He was 74 and we would be painting together, and he would look over at me and he would be like, Jenity, you're not like those fakers. You're like a real art ninja. And I would look over and I'd be like, Bill, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, you're just like a real art samurai. And he would call me an art ninja all the time. At this point, I was a casual runner. I sometimes did fitness classes at the gym with moms. But I was by no means an athlete, right? And so he kept calling me an art ninja. And finally, I was like, Bill, you got to tell me, like, where is this coming from? And he's like, Jenity, when I was a young boy, I used to watch samurai films, and they were black and white. And one time, there was this episode where the villagers had to decide who were the real ninjas and who were the fakes. And Jenity, you're like a real art ninja.
you're the genuine article, is what he was saying.
How is this even related? But okay. And now it makes sense because I have become an art ninja. But it's, you know, it's capturing moments like that in my journal. We were just like, what did he know that I didn't know? Or what did he see that I didn't see? And actually, even before that, I had just started working out at a rec center, okay? And I only started working out at the rec center because it was a half a mile from my house and I could walk there and it just seemed like something I should do. But as I was working out and kind of getting into this world of fitness, I noticed there was two viewpoints and neither of them were desirable to me. One was there would be people who just seemed like they were just beating themselves up and it was never enough. And then on the other hand, you've got people that are, you know, filming themselves and ab check and flexing. I didn't want that either. And so I had a question. And the question is, what is the healthy perspective to have? And I was at the gym and I was in the mirror and I was just doing some bicep curls. And so a thought came into my mind and it was, you can be a warrior for him. And I, you know, having been through so much and having worked so hard to try and develop this relationship with deity, this idea of it's not about you at all. It's about how can you bless others with your strength, you know? And I think it's so funny that that idea, I wrote it in my journal, you can be a warrior for him. Having no idea that a few years down the road, I'm actually going to be an American Ninja Warrior. And so you capture these stories and it fills you with awe and wonder because you're like, was that a coincidence? I don't think so.
After starting to live and own the mental metaphors of being an art ninja and then also a warrior for God, one day Jenity decided to put her actual physical body into the fray in a very public way. This happened in early pre-production rounds of seasons 11, 13, 14, and 15 of the very popular program American Ninja Warrior. It wasn't until season 17, however, that production resulted in airtime for her with national exposure. When you look back on it, it was all kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy with the labels preceding the opportunities. For Jenity, these activities, admittedly exciting and fulfilling and sometimes just downright fun or entertaining, have been woven into her life story as part of something larger and personally spiritual for her.
The practice of writing and reading and praying, obviously throughout my own experience, led me to receive inspiration and led me to have an ear for heaven, for the divine, for somebody out there that's telling me to do stuff like move to Colorado, right? Well, I was in the climbing gym when that same familiar voice said, you should apply to American Ninja Warrior. And I was just like, what? and I just brushed it away. Like, absolutely not. But this is the thing with my personal practice and experience is that when the divine is trying to tell me something, it's consistent and it comes over and over again. So if I totally reject the first inspiration, it will come again. And it kept coming day after day after day, American Ninja Warrior. And I was like, really don't want to do that. And then finally, I just had to pray about it and write about it because it was coming and it was there. And as I did so, I felt, yes, this is something you should pursue. So then I had to sign up to take ninja classes at a local gym with teenage boys, and that was really vulnerable, and I felt like an idiot most days, and I did apply for the show, and now it's been 5 seasons.
Our thanks to Jenity Page for taking time to visit with us. You can watch her on American Ninja Warrior Season 17 or get to know her artwork and learn about upcoming events that feature her from her website, jenitypage.com. Jenity is spelled J-E-N-E-D-Y and Page is P-A-I-G-E. This episode was produced by Jess Scoville with assistance from Lily Jensen and Jenna McMartin. Sound design by Ted Kim. I'm Marcus Smith. The Constant Wonder Podcast is a production of BYU Radio. I want to recommend another BYU radio podcast that I think you'll really enjoy. It's called Uncomfy, sticking with moments that challenge us. It's brand new and it has video as well as audio. If you're someone who wants to engage with others on important topics, but you're not sure just how, or maybe you're burned out on social media and you wish you could bring some humanity back into discussions in real life, maybe still online, maybe not, well then Uncomfy is for you. You're going to hear real people describing challenging moments when they decided to stick with the discomfort, and in the process, they found some community healing or learned how to talk about what matters to them or simply discovered greater empathy in their relationships with others. And you can do it too. New episodes of Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, drop every Wednesday, and you can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.